Well, now to this utterly challenging matter of encouraging Australians, you and me and our children, to learn to speak more than just English. How to do this, though, has stirred quite a debate, quite a heated one at times, in the Australian newspaper of late. Both sides of the debate want the government to invest serious money for the learning of second languages. But one side would like to see that money spent on promoting Asian languages and culture, while the other emphasises the need to learn European languages with which English has an affinity, in effect to continue to focus on, say, German, Italian, French, and then to move to more Asian languages. Well, Professor Michael Wesley is the incoming Executive Director of the Lowy Institute and the former Director of the Griffith University's Asia Institute, and he has been keenly arguing the case that Australian students need to learn Asian languages, and I'm delighted to say that he joins me now, alongside Professor Joseph Lobianco, a veteran language researcher who's Chair of Language and Literacy Education and Associate Dean of Global Relations at the Graduate School of Education at the University of Melbourne. Gentlemen, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Michael Wesley, first let's take a quick look at the report that you published for Griffith University's Asia Institute, Building an Asia Literate Australia, which is very much part of Kevin Rudd's Asian language push that was articulated at the 2020 summit. What, in essence, are you arguing?
Well, what we're arguing is that the world economy that comes out of this crisis is going to be very different from the world economy that went into the crisis. Firstly, the world economy will be much more knowledge intensive as it comes out of the crisis. And secondly, it will be much more Asia-centred. And to be able to compete in the new world economy that comes out of this crisis, Australians need an understanding of Asian languages, Asian cultures, because that will be very much the dynamic part of the world economy that comes out of this crisis.
And accordingly, that report suggested that it would take a generation, there's nothing quick fix about this, but that you proposed an $11.3 billion mass Asian language literacy plan, basically.
That's right. I mean, you can't do these things quickly, and you can't do these things on the cheap. To do them properly, you have to spend money and spend time to get it right.
You say that it's critical for the country's prosperity that half of all Australians become competent in a key Asian language over the next 30 years. Is that possible, Michael, or is that an ambit claim?
No. I think it's very possible, but we have to take it seriously. I mean, what we have to realise as a country is just how isolated we are, if you like, from other developed countries. Other developed countries are taking second and third language acquisition extremely seriously.
Yes, it is awesome to compare and contrast. And therefore, Joe Lobianco, why is it so different here in Australia? Why have we not taken for granted the notion that we have to attempt to be interested in, and languages is code really for getting involved in another culture? Why do we just seem to be, well, we're going backwards in our assumption that we ought to do this here in Australia?
We've been very ambitious in relation to policies, but our delivery has been very diminished by the fact that the systems that deliver education in Australia have, I think, not collaborated sufficiently well. There isn't good articulation between what students do in primary schools and what they get taught in secondary schools, and then to university-level study. I think we've been lulled into a sense of false security by the really strong presence of English in the world, which is an undeniable reality, but it in fact makes things harder for monolinguals rather than easier, because we're dealing with people who know English and know other languages when we only know one. So I think that there have been those kinds of problems. And if you look at the United States, the two moments in which they have been impelled into taking this seriously have been moments of crisis. The first one was the launch by the Soviet Union of the Sputnik satellite in 1956, and the US invested heavily in language and area studies after that, particularly Russian, and the 9/11 atrocities in New York and Washington. And what has happened since then has been the creation by, under the George Bush regime, of the National second language initiative and flagship initiatives and StarTalk, these big programs, they've been stimulating the teaching of strategic languages through this initiative.
See, Michael Wesley, I think part of the claim in your report is that the way Australia engaged with Asia was through big firms and big government departments. And so you had a certain elite who learned how to get by with languages in that respect. Now we're going, smaller firms in the service industries, in the knowledge industries, are going into these cultures. And are you saying that they're just totally ill-equipped for actually talking to these people and talking to Asian countries and in their own languages?
Absolutely, Geraldine. I mean, we have, since launching the report, been pretty much overwhelmed by small business owners getting in touch with us and saying, look, more strength to your arm, because I need Indonesian speakers who are also people who understand Australian business practices and Australian culture. I need Australians who can speak Indonesian, and I cannot, for love nor money, find any of them. And the same goes for a range of Asian languages. We have to understand that the Australian economy is changing. We are going to be competing in the service industries, in the entertainment industries, in the knowledge industries, and these industries are going to be increasingly dominated by Asian consumers who, quite frankly, want to consume in their mother tongues, and to be competitive, we need to be able to understand it and to operate in those tongues.
Well, let's get to the debate, because, you know, you're both in effect in agreement here, that has grown up just as you're proposing, Michael. What I would have thought was sort of pretty obvious, that there has to be almost a preference for Asian languages given our geography. But I think, Professor Lobianco, you think that it is more complicated, and you're inclined, you don't take quite the strong view that, say, Luke Slattery in The Australian, who says, look, we should be pragmatic. We should still start with familiar European-based languages so that people will actually get interested in languages and only then move to Asian languages. I think you take a slightly different view, Joe Lobianco, don't you?
Yes, my view is that we have many reasons for learning languages, and I agree with the utilitarian and economic arguments to a certain extent, and I think that we should provide them. I also strongly agree with the points about Indonesian. I think it's extremely sad how poorly we do with Indonesian. Indonesian is an extremely important language for Australia. It should be taught from primary school on. Because it uses the Latin script, students can read Indonesian relatively quickly. It's a very important strategic language for our country. There's a lot of reasons why we want to promote Indonesian, and yet it does really poorly among the Asian languages. It's the least well-performed one, and I think that that's a really unfortunate result of partly the way we have promoted languages on economic grounds, because that doesn't serve the case for Indonesian as well as it does for some other languages. But having said that, I think that there are multiple reasons for doing languages, and we will always want to teach both European and Asian languages and world languages that don't fit into the either of those categories, such as Spanish or Arabic. And among these reasons are heritage. Many, many Australians identify with languages spoken in other countries and want to learn them. That is their preference. And often there'll be languages that we can't maintain in schools and we shouldn't try. But I think the principal reason for having languages, particularly in primary and compulsory education, is for humanistic and intellectual reasons, for curiosity, and fundamentally for intellectual development. And
but why wouldn't you, though, say, well, clearly a leadership role played by the government and others who care to actually encourage Australian students and their parents to start engaging with the Asian region? You know, language is a gateway to culture. Why wouldn't you prioritise it as a major statement of intent, in a way?
Well, in my own writing, I've always done that, but I think that one of the things that happens with the study of languages is that you engage with yourself by comparing and contrasting with what you learn. And I think that, therefore, there remains a very strong case for serious teaching of European languages in our schools. I don't see any conflict between these two things. I think they're both very important. But I think there is a difference between structuring education choices around commercial and economic needs and thinking about them differently, principally about humanistic and intellectual reasons.
Yes, Professor Joe Lobianco is our guest from the University of Melbourne, and Professor Michael Wesley, the incoming executive director of the Lowy Institute. In fact, before I go back to Michael Wesley, you have written very strong phrase in one of your reports recently, Joe Lobianco. The approach that effectively says, let's do a security-based language policy for mass education. You know, let's look at where we have a deficit and let's go for it. Such an approach risks infecting the study of language and culture with a sense of national insecurity, even of personal anxiety. Michael Wesley, is there any risk of this?
Oh, look, I think there is. And, I mean, I do think Joe's right in that giving language study too strong a security or an economic imperative does risk tying it up with political agendas. And I just think that language study needs to be ingrained as part of our national culture, as part of our national psyche, in a way that isn't tied to short-term economic imperatives or short-term security imperatives. But I do think that given where we are, I mean, Australia will always be an island continent off the rim of Asia. The closest cultures, the closest civilizations, societies to us are going to be those civilizations and societies that speak ancient languages. In order to engage with these societies as you do, you tend to engage much more closely with countries and societies that are much more close to you. We will need a much greater ability as a society to think as they do, to talk in their tongues, to understand their cultures, to understand their societies. And so I do think that there needs to be an acknowledgement in our national culture and in our national psyche that this is a long-term, enduring, bipartisan challenge for us.
Your sparring partner in the Australian, the journalist Luke Slattery, says that most Asians already use English for global business purposes. I think there were 176 million Chinese were studying English in 2005. If English is widely spoken, do we really need to learn Mandarin or Korean or Japanese?
Of course we do. Look, the issue on which I disagree with Luke Slattery is that Chinese are learning English in order to do regional and global business. That is simply not correct. What you can see increasingly with the rise of China is that much of the Chinese economy's dynamism and its international trade and investment links are fostered very much on links with ethnic Chinese communities throughout the Asia-Pacific region. And increasingly, the vital and dynamic business links are those between ethnic Chinese in mainland China and Southeast Asia and other parts of the Asia-Pacific region. And you can bet your bottom dollar that they are doing business in Chinese. The number of Australian businesses, the number of Australian business people who have failed in the region because they swagger into the region thinking, look, they speak English, therefore I don't need to make any effort. They think that they've stitched up a deal with a business person or a business in the Asia-Pacific region, and suddenly they find it falls through because their area of agreement wasn't as broad as they thought it was, simply because they didn't understand the culture of the person they were speaking to in English.
And it is amazing, Joe Lobianco, that it's really Anglo-Saxons, like it's an Anglo thing that we don't think we have to learn other cultures or other languages. All other languages, from what I've been reading, essentially assume they will have to be curious about the way other cultures speak and ergo think. How on earth are we going to get over this?
Well, I think it is true that there is a particular English language-based problem with learning second languages. I've looked at this in the UK and in the US, and people have been definitely lulled into a false sense of security about this. And it's undeniable English does have this extraordinary function in the world. No other language in history has fulfilled this function like English does today. And so I think it's not surprising that people have assumed that this is the case, that they are let off the hook from having to make the effort. And that's partly why I think it's very important for us to begin early, make sure that students have success in primary schools with a second language, make sure that they continue through secondary schools. We have to build a public expectation of bilingualism. And if you think of the most successful education system in the world, it is Finland. And in Finland, under all the international assessments of student achievement, the Finns come out on top on many, many measures. And many students in Finland will study four languages through their schooling. It's just an expectation of parents and uncles and aunts and everybody that people will know several languages. And I hope that we get to something like that, and that a significant number of the languages that students study will be Asian languages, but that there will continue to be strong teaching of European languages as well.
Okay, yes, I'll have to take it to my own home. With great regret, my son gave up the Mandarin he was doing and shows no interest in pursuing it. And so I feel like I've failed completely. Thank you, gentlemen, very much indeed for an interesting discussion.
Thanks,
Geraldine.
And Joe Lobianco is from the University of Melbourne, and Professor Michael Wesley, the incoming Executive Director of the Lowy Institute. And I might add, if you that discrimination study that I referred to very much at the top of the program, we'll have details on our website of how you can find where you can find the research. Andrew Lee from the ANU was involved in that, and it was pretty disturbing stuff, actually.